If you're a member of my generation, your first encounter with Jason and the Argonauts may have been on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon watching local television, or as it was known in the late 20th century, TV. The weekend programming schedule in the Ante-Computatrum period was often filled with second-run movies, such as Jason and the Argonauts, starring Todd Armstrong as Jason, but in truth featuring the stop-action animation of Ray Harryhausen. Here were a morally certain Jason and a Medea unrelated to King Aedes, but certainly no Apsyrtus nor Lemnian women. The heroes battled Harryhausen's famous creations, armed skeletons, the giant bronze man Talos, and a hydra that protected the Golden Fleece. We can easily note the connections between the 1963 film and the production by Chatterbox Audio Theater. But the creators at Chatterbox have returned to the classical source for the myth, the epic poem of Apollonius of Rhodes, called the Argonautica. That work is the most significant extant epic written between the time of Homer and that of Virgil. We don't know many details about the life of Apollonius. We don't even know if he really was from the island of Rhodes. It's a fairly safe assumption that he was a librarian at the famous library in Alexandria, Egypt, in the 3rd century BCE. There has probably been no more exciting time to be a librarian, although modernity rivals it because of the explosion of digital information. Under the direction of the Ptolemaic kings of Egypt, the librarians of Alexandria were trying to gather the great works of science, literature, history, and philosophy that had been produced in the classical age. Moreover, the Greek worldview had greatly expanded after Alexander the Great's campaigns in the East, and thus there were all sorts of new knowledge to catalog. The librarians in Alexandria did more than simply systematically organize this knowledge. They were actively involved in the production of it. Apollonius's connection to the library can be detected in the epic through his delight in obscure facts and strange, unknown places. The period of history after the death of Alexander the Great is commonly referred to as the Hellenistic Age. This new age demanded a new aesthetic. Apollonius's contemporary and fellow poet Callimachus is famous for two phrases that might epitomize at least one element of that aesthetic. According to the poem The Aetia, the god Apollo appeared to Callimachus and advised him to, quote, make the sacrificial victim as fat as possible, but keep the muse slender, unquote. He is also reputed to have written mega biblion, mega kakon, or a big book is a big evil. Now that latter phrase can be very useful to students wanting to avoid Russian novels, but what exactly do these phrases mean for a literary theory, and how could they apply to epic? Well, first we should point out that Apollonius's poem is significantly shorter than Homer's or Virgil's. It stands at about 6,000 lines in length, while the Homeric poems are each about 12,000 lines in length. But there must have been more to this new aesthetic than simply a prohibition against length. The Hellenistic poet also has to avoid all the grandeur and gravity that at times accompany a magnum opus. Apollonius's decision to write about Jason and the Argonauts was a clever one, for in doing so he did not need to confront the Homeric epics directly. The traditional myth sets Jason's story in the generation before the Trojan War. The poet could therefore avoid telling that famous story directly because it had not happened yet. Apollonius nonetheless alludes to it in so many ways, in the very phrases of his poetry, in the genealogies of his characters, who are, in many cases, the ancestors of the Homeric heroes, and in the itinerary of the Argo itself, which often foreshadows that of Odysseus and his crew. In essence, Apollonius wrote a prequel to the Trojan War, and yet his prequel does not contest with Homer's in the same aesthetic arena. The Hellenistic poet should not try to write a poem more heroic than the Homeric works that define the mythical heroic age. The Argonautica thus may provide some useful advice to modern dramatists obsessed with the prequel. George Lucas and Peter Jackson, if you're listening, you should be taking notes now. If a prequel is a response to a successful work of art, it is quite unlikely that the secondary work will succeed according to the same criteria as the original work. Apollonius could never have outshone Homer in composing a Homeric poem, but the Hellenistic author did not contest with the oldest work in Western literature. What exactly is the character of Apollonius's epic? Let's return to a few scenes from the production by Chatterbox Audio Theater, based, of course, on Apollonius's telling, to answer that question. One of the first stops of the Argonauts was at the island of Lemnos, where the women had murdered all the male inhabitants. For the Argonauts, it was a sensual challenge. The catcalls and whoops of joy of the chatterbox actors are in keeping with Apollonius's depiction of the event. But the fun of Lemnopalooza hides the dark truth of the annihilation of the male inhabitants. A second pertinent example is the rowing contest in which Heracles defeats all of the other heroes. This episode always reminds me of one of those games parents devise to keep children occupied in the car, a seemingly harmless diversion. For the Argonauts, however, the game results in both the kidnapping and apparent rape of Hylas, along with the loss of the strongest of the heroes, Heracles himself, who goes off to find his beloved. Finally, consider the festive celebration at the end. In both the Chatterbox production and in Apollonius, the Argonauts achieve their objective. They return to Iolcus with a golden fleece, and the play and the poem end abruptly. Yet the ancient audience would have known, and even many of us in the modern audience do know, that the ultimate outcome of the adventure was not happy. Jason would not become king of Iolcus, and he and his young wife would emigrate to Corinth, where Medea would be unwelcome. Her unhappiness there would affect one of the most well-known tragedies in Greek myth. The second half of the poem is indeed the love affair of Jason and Medea. Both are young and naive, and they seem to believe that love, with a little help from magic, can conquer all. At least they never seem to consider the full consequences of their actions. Take, for example, the consummation of their relationship that occurs on the island of the Phaeacians. You will remember that Jason is given a choice of sex with Medea or sending her back to Colchis to her probable death. As it turns out, according to studies, relationships consummated out of the fear of death are not well established and tend to end rather quickly after consummation. We, the audience who are aware of the ultimate outcome, see both the passionate and problematic beginnings of the love affair. Virgil, in fact, borrowed much in his depiction of Dido and Aeneas from Apollonius. If we attempt some sort of synthesis of these examples, what tone do we find in Apollonius' poem and the Chatterbox play? Well, to simplify, much of the adventure of the 1963 film is there. There are exciting and strange new people to meet, and obstacles to overcome. But contrary to the ethic of the second-run films of my youth, the good guys don't always win. At least the well-informed audience member will notice the darkness of evil creeping in to undermine the happy ending. So now, back to Jason and Medea's wedding party. Be sure to toast the bride and groom.